Do it from memory.
I can't do it from memory. This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're broadcasting to you live from the inside of my brain, where things are confused and disheveled, and there's papers everywhere, which is why we can never bring things to memory quickly, but at least it's free.
Yeah. And we're covered by BIPCOT, no government license. Go to BIPCOT.org. This is Michael Dean, talking to Tommy Barker. I'm still sick, but I'm on the mend. This is my first show.
Ruby.
I've only done like 3 shows in 3 weeks. And you have an announcement. I'll talk about that, but you have an announcement about a contest. What is it, Davi?
Yeah, so we've talked about it a little bit before, but antiwar.com and bitcoin.bombs.com were doing a meme contest to sort of hold Google's feet to the fire for suspending antiwar.com's ad service. And the finalists for the contest are now up. If you go to bitcoin.bombs.com, it's on the front page. It's called Don't Expose Evil Contest Entries, and there's a lot of really cool stuff in here.
Yeah, what's the backstory?
Especially like the one
give me the short form after you tell me the one you
so
like.
So antiwar.com has used, I think it's AdWords or no, Google Ad, I forget the name of the service, but it's essentially ads from Google on antiwar's site that gives antiwar.com some revenue. And Google suspended the account for violating their violence policy because antiwar.com posted pictures like 5, 6, 7 years ago of the Guantanamo detainees being tortured. And the point of the policy is supposedly to not promote violence, and they're specifically sort of condemning violence. And so the accusation is that Google is running cover for government corruption and violence.
Well, they do own they do make military robots now.
Yeah. So that's the accusation, and even if it's just some sort of bureaucratic snafu, that doesn't mean you shouldn't hold a company's feet to the fire when they do something silly. And so they had this meme contest. And so it's things like an ostrich with its head in the sand with the hashtag don't expose evil, or a screenshot of a Google search bar and all the autofills that fill in when you say expose evil. And
yeah,
some of them are really clever. Some of them seem like they're thrown together from other issues, but a lot of them are general anti-war stuff, not necessarily about Google. But there's a good, 20 memes on this page right now. So people should go check it out. There's some funny stuff there.
People aren't always clear on what makes a good meme. I remember I used to go into this coffee shop in LA, the Downbeat Cafe. And there was one guy that worked there that like kind of used it as his pulpit. He'd always have something at the counter that he made that was like some text and images for some political purpose. And it was never clear what he was saying. Like, one time he had one that said like, I'm George Bush and I want to control things all over the world. Vote for me. And it was like, it wasn't really clear like what he was saying, like it kind of looked like maybe he was for George Bush. Like he kind of thought that everybody had the same, like fill in the blanks in their head that he did.
And yeah, it's that pose law problem, right?
Where yeah.
He can't tell whether or not they're serious or making fun of themselves.
Yep. So,
it seems like that happens to a lot of people. Like I get in this situation a lot when I'm like talking with people in like a forum, especially comments, where it's like I can't tell from the comments what they're trying to say. It's kind of like nonsensical, so they're either saying one thing or the opposite of what they think they're saying. And when it's that unclear, it's really a communication problem.
Most people cannot communicate very clearly in writing, especially and they think they can, and actually a lot of people have the problem of they actually can write really kind of like eloquent, complex sentences and paragraphs that are not clear. And it's far more preferable to me and to any intelligent person for someone to write boneheadedly simple sentences that you can get what they mean. I generally try to go for something in between, like kind of interesting writing and talking, but simple enough that anyone can get it,
Yeah, well, I mean, that's sort of, for me, that's almost like a rule of thumb, especially if you're communicating with a stranger, is that it needs to be clear enough that a 4-year-old can understand it.
Yeah.
And I kind of have this problem because most of my education, most of my vocabulary anyway, came from books that other people don't read. And so there's a lot of examples of things that I think are commonly known words and other people don't know them. And there's like this Aristotelian mean where like if that, I tell them the definition like that of word. Like that, is that what not is a that word people are familiar with?
What is it?
An Aristotelian mean is the middle point means, between man. Two extremes where no a balance is struck.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you meant but words like is, exuberance, but that word is like exuberance is a 50-cent word. That was like a $5.50 word.
All right. Sorry. So this is the problem I have, right? So I either drop these words in sentences, assuming that they're common because they're common to me, in which case I make people feel
you
stupid.
You have irrational or, exuberance for concepts.
I do. That's very true.
And that's actually, you used that term recently, but you didn't give it proper credit. It's an economic term for people making decisions that are economically unsound, but wasn't it created by Ben Bernanke?
I think it was. Yeah, it was his way of sort of explaining the why he thought a boom in the market wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
But it had, I think it's an underutilized term. I think it has much more application and irrational, especially exuberance. In discussions of communism.
Yeah. I really liked what you said recently about how you picture liberals as just this, I don't think you used the word herd, but just this herd of people across the land, across the world, having bad ideas. They have irrational exuberance for bad ideas.
They do. They get an idea in their head and they're so enthusiastic about it, they think everyone else will jump on it just immediately if they just tweet hard enough.
I said something recently along those lines that kind of seemed to have gone viral on Twitter with other people was saying that ANCOMs, anarcho-communists, that they have the mind of a child, or that communism appeals to people with the, you know, economic understanding of a child.
There's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
So the opposite extreme is if I like am speaking to a person and I define what is actually a very commonly known term, which is unfortunately kind of like calling them stupid too.
Like what?
Like imagine, like if I were just talking to someone and I said, well, I think that it's pretty common knowledge. You know, common knowledge is this concept that many people are familiar with a thing, and so it's sort of taken as read. Like you can over-define things, which is sort of pretentious.
It seems like there are a bunch of phrases that are common knowledge to libertarians that aren't to most people, like tragedy of the commons, which is not a libertarian term, but it's a term that we use a lot. Or, market. There's a lot of market terms. Nima uses a lot of them. A lot of them come from Mises articles and things that I find too academic to read. But, you know, it's good.
They're really important concepts. It is good to have. That's why I have such an irrational exuberance about them. It's because I wish that these things, which are counterintuitive and yet true, were more commonly understood to the point that they became intuitive and people's intuition about economics started working for them instead of against them.
And there's a term that I coined a couple of years ago that I really like for people who like have PhDs in economics that, you know, believe in the wrong kind of economics. I call them people who are experts in things that are wrong. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that in the world.
Yeah. It's better to be ignorant than to be, what is it?
Well, because, you know, I mean,
or something. Certain in error.
You know, I believe that an 8-year-old who has had Austrian economics explained to him has a better understanding of economics than a PhD college professor who's a Keynesian of economics.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, it's as simple to understand as like a kid who has had a grade school anatomy class knows more about medicine than a person who studied leeches in the Middle Ages. I mean, that's really what it boils down to is, you know, just enough facts to be dangerous is better than, you know, the demonic view of disease.
Well, you know, they say, is that an exaggeration, though? Because, you know, they say that psychiatry is in its infancy and it's at the point where medicine was when it was practiced, or dentistry was when it was practiced by the village blacksmith. Where would you say economics in general is? Maybe around the invention of the internal combustion engine, but before they put one in a car?
I'm really hoping it's where astronomy was during the Renaissance. I hope it's that we have discovered a few fallacies that we need to overturn. And if we throw over those handful of fallacies, all of the anomalies and outliers and remainders of these calculations come into harmony in some sort of a heliocentric
model. So basically, you're asking that all the government economists that run the world quit believing the world is flat and the sun revolves around it.
Yeah. I realize they're like heavily invested in the flat globe makers. But yeah, this is more optimism than anything. I hope that we have sort of broken the Gutenberg press on economics and that we're going to see a flurry of reevaluation of old assumptions. Maybe not.
Stupid people bring me down, especially when they're really smart and have control over my life.
Yeah, stupid people who are really smart are some of the worst stupid people
experts out there. In things that are wrong.
It's also, to some extent, it's these people that think that memorization is an education.
Well, that's another most
of what expert, yeah.
Another huge problem, and I've gone after this many times on the show, is people who are actual experts in one thing, like, you know, let's say DNA splicing, who think that gives them the right to have strong opinions on every other aspect of how the world should be organized. That's really common, man. There's nothing as dangerous as someone with a PhD in one narrow field lecturing you on some other field.
I mean, isn't that physicians commenting on the economics of medicine all over?
Yeah.
Like people go to doctors and say, well, how would you like this to be run? And they say, communist, obviously.
My
and
doctor, like I have a really good doctor. I have several doctors right now that I have health insurance. But one of my doctors, who's like the best asthma doctor in Wyoming, which isn't saying a lot, but she is really good, actually lectures me about why the government needs to make healthcare like different. Every time I go to her, like I don't even bring it up. She just says that to all her patients, I think. Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
You want to do the Heisenberg metaphor?
Yeah. I mean, we had a ton of notes and didn't even touch him in that. That just kind of happened spontaneously. You
instead of Botox.
Thanks, DeRay. Putting the bones back in place is only half of the solution. We designed a nutritional supplement program.
I couldn't have scripted the Aristotelian mean thing. Nutrients.
I know. You didn't even notice it. Nutrition we will have you didn't even notice what you did.
Faster and more permanent recovery. Look us up on the web at drwartman.com.
Yeah. All right. Now we'll go to our notes. I'll talk about my health a little bit at first, though.
Okay.
Because people are asking. Let me put my oxygen meter on my finger and measure it. 90%, 91. That's because I oxaloaded. I oxaloaded before the show.
What's it supposed to be?
Should be 95-ish.
Okay.
For a healthy person. Mine's like 85 or 86 without oxygen, but okay. I oxaloaded for a while. So I got it up to the 90 for the show. I don't like doing the show with toot in my nose. Yeah.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Freedom Fiends. Meow. So Nima Vadadi's going to be on the show this weekend.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What's the occasion?
Just, you know, he comes back every 6 months, whether he needs it or not, for one day.
Okay.
It seems like. Yeah, it's going to be him and Ben. Him and Ben and MK on Sunday. So I want to talk about my health a little bit because people are asking, and I made pronouncements on this show a couple weeks ago that sounded like I'd ruined my lungs and was done with talk radio and was turning it all over to you guys. But I have an appointment on Friday where I'm going to get the results from my pulmonary tests and my x-rays, lung x-rays. Other than that, I think I do not have COPD. I think what happened, Because I started getting kind of bad asthma-like symptoms around January, and it kind of got worse. I think what happened was I was just so toxified from vaping. You know, I smoked cigarettes for 30 years. I smoked 60-pack years in 30 years, and then I quit. Then I started vaping, and I was vaping probably the equivalent of 5 packs of cigarettes in vaping per day. I mean, I was chain vaping, you know, 18 to 21 milligram nicotine constantly, like from the time I got up to the time I went to bed, to the point where I was so overhooked on nicotine that I would get up in the middle of the night after 4 hours and have to vape and then go back to sleep. And I think that my lungs were just so coated with the goo that is the delivery for vaping, you know, the, what is it? PG and what are the
two? An oil.
Vegetable glycerin.
Oh yeah. And, there's two and different kinds.
Petroleum. What is the PG? Propylene glycol.
I wonder if one is better than the other.
I don't know. My doctor says propylene glycol one
produces more smoke.
My doctor said propylene glycol is poison. You know, it's an ingredient in antifreeze for one thing, and it's allowed for use in foods. Like it's kind of used as a gelling agent in foods, but that doesn't mean it's good. You know, just because the government says it can be used in something doesn't mean it's good. But, and also right. especially like sucking it into your lungs. I think that my lungs were so coated with that crap that I wasn't getting enough oxygen through it, you know? And then I quit.
You built yourself a little air filter?
Like I built myself like a plastic covering on the inside of my lungs. Because I've been at 85% blood oxygen for a few months now. And that's why they put me on oxygen. And with oxygen, I get up to about 95%, which is what most people are when they're healthy and not on oxygen. But so I think that's what happened. I quit vaping 34 days ago. I did it on this show. Davi was with me when I had my last vape, and then I sent my vaping.
You sent all your gear to me.
I sent my gear to you and all my liquids to Chandler. And but I really think that it's not asthma, it's not COPD. I think it's just long term effect from vaping, and then like effects from stopping. Like for the first month until a few days ago, I was just like coughing up stuff that looked like escargot. All the time.
What does escargot look like?
Snails. Yeah.
So just slimy goop trail?
Yeah. Yeah. So knock on wood, I think I'm on the mend. I am feeling better. I'm breathing better. I'm still like nowhere near 100%. And I'm still going to be on the oxygen on and off for 3 months. They've authorized it for 3 months. I'm going to use it for 3 months even if I don't need it. I like it. It's my new drug, man. But it's kind of annoying to be on it, to have the tube up your nose. But I'm digging it. And so,
do they make oxygen vaporizers? Could it be like a tube that you?
No, on? But you know what? When you go into an oxygen bar, it's basically medical oxygen mixed with scents. They're delivered with the same crap that they put in vape. So it's
the
really,
same like flavor goop?
Yes, yeah, without the nicotine. Yeah, it's like, you know, PG and great. VG, yeah, with flavor in it. So it's not healthy, man. Yeah. Jim Jesus says, sounds good tonight. Glad you're doing better. So shout out to Jim, one of our co-hosts. And so, yeah, man, I think that's all I got to say. And we're going to a break. And we're going to come back and talk about Heisenberg and why I'm him. After this trip to the market. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Exclusive. You know, Zazzle took down my Heisenberg for President shirt because they said it was trademark infringement.
Oh, were those your shirts? Yeah. I saw those. Those are funny. I had no idea. How many do you sell when you make something like that?
So far, I have sold one.
That's cool.
I just started doing Zazzle a couple of days ago, and they take 24 hours to approve the art before it goes live. And so only like six shirts are actually approved of the like 20 that I've uploaded. But they rejected both of my Heisenberg designs because they said it was trademark infringement. I'm like, no, he's a real person. You can't trademark the word Heisenberg. Oh, because
it didn't have a picture from Breaking Bad. It was just the...
No, it was just the Nazi scientist font. Yeah.
Wasn't Heisenberg a Nazi scientist that the Americans...
Yeah, he was.
...took in Operation... What was it? Operation...
Manhattan? Paperclip. No, that was the other fascist.
Paperclip. the Chris Cantwell one. So
it didn't have any... It was just text. There was no picture on it or anything. So I don't even know what stupid. They think the trademark was.
So I'm using my RE20 mic, my $500 broadcast mic. I haven't used it in like a year because I've had this like... I've been using the same mic you guys use, but using it XLR instead of USB. And because I've had this like kind of egalitarian, like I want to use the cheapest mic I can that all my co-hosts use to prove that you can make media cheap. But I feel like I've proved it. So I'm going to go back to this one for a while now because it sounds better. And the main thing is it has a bigger like access of, I don't have to be right on it. I can be like 4 inches off to the side.
Does it make up for any of the raspiness in your voice?
Maybe. Jim says I sound good. I'll be right back.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
So, what do you think of Barack Obama?
I think he's a liar, socialist, and his feet stink.
Yeah, man. All right, so
I think he locks people up in dungeons and tells them to answer that he's holding up five fingers when he's only holding up four. That's what I think.
I know. I mean, he doesn't do it directly, but he has people do it, and it's kind of like, you know, the creepiest, worst villain on Law & Order is holding people hostage and torturing them. That's Obama.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
By proxy. So when I thought
I
watched
the old 1984 today. That's why I have that in my mind.
God.
It's a heck of a film, man.
It is. So when I thought I was dying, or I thought my lungs were spent a few weeks ago, I was basically trying to like turn the whole show over to you guys. And what did you say to me?
I said, can't be done. You're like the Heisenberg of the show. And we're like the Jesse or the, or the Todd of the show. We know where the buttons are, but we don't know the chemistry. If something goes wrong, we don't know how to synthesize our own acid propylene or whatever that scene was.
Propylene glycol. No, what is it? It's whatever's in the bee, barrel.
Yeah, there's this scene in Breaking Bad where Jesse is taken down to Mexico kind of against his will.
Hostage.
To teach them how to make Walter White's signature blue meth. And he gets there and he's like, I don't know how to synthesize this one chemical. I just take it out of the tub labeled B. That's how I do
it. With the B on it, yeah. The methylamine.
It's not methylamine.
It's something acid. Methylamine is what they rob off the train, and it's something else. But yeah, so you think that...
So we know the recipe, but if something goes wrong, we don't know how to synthesize our own.
That's really true, man. It's really true. Yeah. You know, I've had this thing of like, here's the thing. When I was a kid and I took LSD when I was 14.
So 5 or 6. Oh, okay.
14. How old were you when you took LSD?
Ah, wow. I was probably 21 or 22.
Square.
I was a straight edge kid in high school. I didn't do anything.
So I was really fascinated that these tiny little microdots had so much power to like change lives in a religious way.
Yeah.
So when I started making podcasts, I kind of felt like each MP3 was like that hit of acid, like something that this individual item that could spread the word and enlighten, even if somebody only got one of them. And I kind of took the care of it that, like, you know, a Heisenberg acid chemist would from like 2006 when I started making podcasts. So, you know, I took all my experience with, you know, 20 years of being a semi-professional musician, being in recording studios, never being the engineer, but watching the engineers carefully.
Sure.
And then getting, you know, computers where you could do it at home without all the expensive equipment. And just, I figured out how to do it. And I never want to put anything out that's not perfect or not great. Doesn't have to be perfect, but, and I've kind of gotten to the point where like we can churn out 7 of these a week with 12 different co-hosts, all using like a $50 microphone and sound better than like 98% of the independent media on the planet. And I love that, but I don't know if, I think you're right. I don't know if it's possible to like replicate it to where if I died, you guys could still do the show and I'd want you to, but I don't know if it would be as technically as good.
Well, I mean, so there's lots of skill sets involved here, right? So it's like we've got the like talking into a microphone thing pretty down.
Which you did not have down. You were the worst talker. I built that.
But you know what? It's the infinite regression problem, right? That no system of mathematics can ever fully describe the entire system of mathematics because it has to contain itself. The more that you train us to replace you, the more that you're building skill sets we don't have, specifically the skill set of replacing ourselves. Does
well,
that make sense?
A lot of it is in that video that I did that you're in. You know the video I'm talking about? Freedom Fangs Guide to Podcasting. But really, to teach it all, you'd have to come live here and like sit next to me for 3 weeks.
You'd have to intern.
I'd have to take you hostage. Fiend guild. Yeah. So if any fiend ever like, you know, loses their home, they can come live here for a month and I'll teach you everything and they can leave.
Cool.
Yeah.
Someone may take you up on that.
I know.
Realize.
I know. contingent on DJ approving it, but yeah. So, yeah, man. Phenolytic acid.
You want to talk about Breaking Bad. Phenolytic acid. There you go.
I guess I'm done talking about how cool I am and how I'm special and nobody else is. But
well, the metaphor is just perfect, right? Because you have Jesse, who sort of like learns at the feet of Walter White and gets to the point that he's producing like a 96% pure product instead of a 99% pure product. But as soon as you pick him up and put him in a different lab, he's totally lost.
Yeah.
And then you have, what is that other kid's name? Victor, the guy who Gus slit his throat for touching the equipment. That guy's like, it's a recipe. It's called a cook. You just follow the instructions. And like, he was sort of blundering through the equipment.
But he won't know what to do when the humidity goes up, like Walt said, you know?
Yeah, right. Like as soon as the season changes, you won't know how to change it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Todd was like actively trying to learn from him and was producing like a 70% pure product
yeah.
once Walt was out of the picture. So,
yeah.
And a lot of it is a different thing. It's
a lot of it's what I do in post too. Like Ben Stone is the closest of any fiends to being able to replace me with the technical end, because he did a podcast before. Actually, the way I met him was I heard his podcast. I liked it. And the audio was really bad. And I wrote to him and said, hey, I like your podcast. Let me help you. And he didn't write back. He was like, who's this loser trying to tell me what to do? And like, I wrote him like three emails in 3 months. And finally, like somebody else said, yeah, the Freedom Fiends sound really good. You should check them out. And then we became like best friends, and I helped him get his audio better. But recently he's been doing the weekend shows without me. And I've taught him how to do them live and make them sound really good over Fiend Phone. And that's another thing. Like, I was not satisfied with the software out there to the point where I found a programmer and like didn't have any money to pay him, and like raised money to pay him some, and then still like convinced him this is something for Liberty that needs to be done. And he did it, and it was great. And so we have our own software to do this now that anyone can use. And you know, yeah. I did say the other day that like, I'm surprised nobody else is using it, but I'll bet people are using it. They just haven't told me. I mean, like, I download software all the time and I don't write the manufacturer and say, this is great. Thank you. I'm using it. You know, I just use it, and it's had over 1,000 downloads. So I imagine there's probably a dozen people using it for podcasts or radio shows. I know of two of a radio show and a podcast are using it actually, but, yeah.
You've done this for other shows too, right? Like not just Ben's.
Yeah, I did it for
somebody else recently.
I did it for what's the one in New Hampshire that talks about polyamory all the time?
Oh, there's so many. Oh, a Rebel Love Show.
Yeah, you know the one in poly. Yeah, there's only six in New Hampshire that talk about polyamory. Yeah, Rebel Love Show. I helped them out. A few others.
Are you rewatching? Because I'm rewatching Breaking Bad.
Yes.
And I'm doing it because I'm going through Better Call Saul withdrawal.
Yeah, me too.
Like, that's why I started again. So I went back to the beginning and I watched it from the beginning.
Well, I watched it from about season three, and I'm in the last season now. So, I want to talk about the actor Mark Margolis, who plays Hector Salamanca.
Sure.
Interestingly, he's not Mexican, but he plays Mexicans a lot. He's Jewish, and he plays a Jewish guy in two movies I really like, in two roles I really like, both by the same filmmaker. One is Pie and one is Requiem for a Dream. In Requiem for a Dream, he's the pawn shop owner that Harry is pawning his mother's TV to for the 40th time. And in Pie, he has a much bigger role. He's kind of the mentor. He's the next door neighbor in the apartment building who's the mathematical genius.
He's like
genius.
A PhD mathematician.
Yeah, but
or
like,
right?
He has some problem, like alcoholic or something. You know, like the mentor is always like used to be the top of his game, but can't do it anymore for some reason. I can't remember why. Is he crippled or what is it? He's not like out teaching anymore.
It's been so long since I've seen it.
Yeah, but he's kind of the mentor.
It's kind of the same. It's the same phenomenon as like Rocky's teacher is too old to fight, but knows all the trade or whatever.
Yeah. Or like, what's the golf movie? A lot of times they're alcoholics.
Golf movie?
Yeah.
Well, that's because they're drinking the pain of having fallen short.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's why I assume.
Or in, the classic.
Dodgeball.
Like, dodgeball. Yeah. If he can dodge a wrench, he can dodge a ball. And he's in a wheelchair. Yeah.
That's another wheelchair. Yeah. They're always sort of diminished for some reason.
Yeah. And, you know, Hector Salamanca, I don't really know that he's the mentor, but he's on oxygen. You know, one thing I've noticed now that I'm on oxygen therapy temporarily, it's amazing how many people in TV and movies are on oxygen.
Yeah.
And you never notice it until you're on it. And I figured out the reason why. It's the cheapest prop to make somebody look like compromised. You take this
$2 brace for a personal injury.
Yeah.
Trial.
You take this $2 piece of plastic and put it in someone's nose, and all of a sudden you like feel sorry for them, you know? Like there's something
wrong. And you know, all of
them.
The attachments are presumed to be there. You probably
don't
even
have to show
the
them.
Tanks.
No, you don't have to show the tanks. Although I have the tanks, we could use the tanks.
Well, I know, but I mean, like if you were doing a show,
you need the cannula.
It's all implied.
You need the cannula.
It's a cannula.
It's the thing that goes in your nose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, you could probably fake that too with just, you know, some fish tank tubing.
Some reptile tank tubing, yes, or something.
Yes, yes. It's the same tubing. It's the same kind of tubing. It's just the cannula has a little patented thing that like goes in the nose. It's a really brilliant way to do it because it replaced face masks, which, you know, like with a cannula, you can eat and talk and unfortunately smoke. There's actually people that smoke on oxygen, which is insane because you can blow yourself up. And if you're on oxygen, you should not be smoking. But the oxygen company has a paper pamphlet packet that comes with it. And one of the things is the letter they'll send you if they find out you're smoking on it. It's like a legal demand that you stop.
Worms.
You, worms. The hamster in your brain, are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
So, Davi.
Yes, Michael? So formal.
Yes. Well, it's, I don't know, it's when I get my lung power back, I won't sound as formal. It's kind of like, it's hard to like steer the weapon and the paintbrush of my voice correctly when it's like this, you know?
Okay.
It's hard to carve my initials in your chest with my saber from across the room correctly. Mm. I might just cut off your nipple. All right. So Saul Goodman, wait. So what did you say about, we were talking about Mark Margolis and The Godfather. So Mark Margolis plays Hector Salamanca. He's also in, Scarface. He plays one of Alberto's henchmen, which is, there's kind of a reference to that. I think there's a scene where Walt and Walt Jr. are watching Scarface. And I think it's a scene that Mark Margolis is in, but I want to talk about the scene in Breaking Bad that I think is one of the best scenes in Breaking Bad, which is saying a lot. I think it's one of the best scenes ever on television, which is saying a lot. And it's almost the level of like great classic cinema, like something from The Godfather. It's the scene where they go down to Mexico and poison Don Eladio by the pool party. And especially that line that it's so Godfather, that line that Gus yells, Don Eladio is dead. It's in Spanish, but he says, Don Eladio is dead. His capos are dead. You have no one left to fight for. Fill your pockets and leave in peace or fight me and die. That is so classic cinema, man. It's great.
You know what's amazing about it, too, is like, so a movie like The Godfather, it really works. It really works because there's been so much character development involved. All the characters. So when you get your really good lines in The Godfather, it's because you know those characters very deeply and you get why those lines are so powerful. But these actors in that scene, they like immediate, like all the character development is like present and it's all done in one scene. You know, they're like, none of them come off as extras. They all come off as completely developed figures, even though they're all brand new characters.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the whores in their high heels and bikinis running away with fistfuls of cash, teetering on their on their high heels. That's funny. Yeah.
Jesse's pretty funny in that scene too, because he seems just sort of
shocked
all around, unimpressed by the whole thing.
Well, at first he thinks he's been sold into slavery until Mike says, we're all going home or none of us are. And then there's that whole scene with the, like, you know, army mash hospital in the dirt, sterile hospital they build in the dirty little abandoned pigeon factory out in Mexico where they stitch them up. I always, and you said that doctor's character's name is Barry Goodman, which is weird because he seems he's Mexican, he's got a Mexican accent, doesn't seem like a Mexican name, but I always assumed that guy was like Mexican ex-Mexican army doctor, because just the way that he sets up this perfect little hospital, you know, in the field, all ready to go, just seems like army MASH unit kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. It just strikes me as, so he's a minor character. He never really appears again in the series, but his IMDb credit gives him a full name. And yeah. It seems odd to me to you give a character a full name.
Well, mm-hmm. A character has to have a name in a script. I mean, even if it's, you know, Mexican doctor, like you can't, which is kind of interesting because the main character in Fight Club, in the book and the movie, has no name.
Yeah.
But if you ever see the script for that, they call him Jack, named after when he's reading that series of articles from, you know, I am Jack Sliver or whatever.
Because so I get it. You have to give him a name, but why give him the name Goodman?
Goodman, I know. I don't know.
Especially when it's never mentioned.
He does appear a little later in one other episode when he hands the phone to Mike, when Mike's out feeding the chickens he's named. I like that Mike names the chickens.
Yeah.
I probably would too if I was stuck out there for 2 weeks recuperating. All right, we'll be back for hour two with Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market. The free market, the unencumbered government free market. Worms.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
You got the intro there, Dobby?
What's that?
You got the intro? I think you need to print the intro out.
Quick.
What's that, Javi?
Sorry. You asked me something, but the music was too loud for me, so what's going on?
Well, that's your problem.
I turned it down. Crisis averted.
Yeah.
Worms.
Yeah, I think you should print out the hour one and two intro, because I like it when you do it, but you don't have it memorized.
Oh, is that what you were asking me? I couldn't hear you.
Yes. Do you know the intro?
I can do it. Yeah.
Go ahead. Do the R2 intro.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
I like the
music was too loud. I couldn't hear what you were asking me to do, or I'd have jumped in and done it.
Oh, I like this picture. This Breaking Bad. Yep, this is good. Makes my chin. Shows my double chin a lot, but I have a double chin. I'm proud of it. I built that double chin sitting in front of a computer for 10 years talking about liberty, spreading liberty, man, trying to teach others to make good audio. So, yep, my fat.
There you go.
Every one of my fat folds is a blow against the state.
There you go.
All right, so we're talking about, we got an email from Nathan.
Hector Salamanca.
Nathan said, I don't know what this means. Nathan, I don't know what this means. I'm not even going to read this. It says, maybe Dobby knows the answer. Why was he a robot with asthma? I thought of him first before I thought of Hector Salamanca for some reason. General Grievous? Who's General Grievous? I don't know what that is,
sounds
man.
Like a Star Wars character.
I don't know what that is. All right, so we're talking about Hector Salamanca on the show Breaking Bad. What did you want to say about him?
I think everyone should go and see Pi if they haven't seen it. It's a phenomenal film, and it is not, I don't know if it's an indie film. It definitely has the feel of an indie film.
Oh, it's an indie film.
Sort of like unnecessarily gritty and black and white.
Unnecessarily. My wife hates that film, but my wife hates that film because my wife used to suffer from migraines, and that movie is about a guy who has migraines And it kind of is probably, she says it's like the best cinematographic representation of what a migraine's actually like. And he has migraines to the point where he ends up tree panning himself with a power drill. He drills holes in his head to relieve it. And so she really doesn't like that.
I love that film because when I did LSD in my 20s,
square,
I lived like that for a while, where like every single number in the world connected to some pattern in my head that I couldn't quite articulate or resolve all the remainders for. And so I really felt like that guy for about 5 years of my life. And it's a very excellent cinematic portrayal of some sort of synchronicity schizophrenia. So
yeah,
that was why I liked it.
Yeah.
But it's underappreciated too. It's not one that I think as many people have seen as should have seen.
I interview the director of it, Darren Aronofsky, in my movie about Selby.
Cool.
Because the movie that really, like, I mean, Pi really made a name for him, but it was like, you know, Sundance film winner. It wasn't like major director name. The movie he made of Selby's book, Requiem for a Dream, is the thing that really made him a A-list director.
And, I didn't even realize that was the same director.
Yeah. And actually, Mark Margolis is in every film he's made, I think. I think he likes him. He often works with the same actors and the same... He always uses the same cameraman. You know, he's got the same crew. And it's like, mostly people that went to film school with him.
Was this guy involved in Breaking Bad? Because there's some definite, like, Requiem vibe to Jesse's insane parties towards, like, the fifth or sixth season of Breaking Bad.
No, but some of the cinematography is influenced by him, including Requiem for a Dream. Aronofsky was the first person to really use a body cam in a major film, you know, where like you have a camera in front of you pointed at you. So it shows just your face and kind of the top of your chest. And it's often used
It's sort of shorthand for you're drunk or high or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's used extensively in Requiem for a Dream. And it's used a couple times in Breaking Bad with Jesse, where he's kind of flipping out and like stalking the night.
It's Jesse on some drugs. It's Jesse when he shoots heroin the first time.
It's Jesse when he wants to kill people.
For a little while.
It's also Jesse when he's like, you know, gunning to kill people. I think they have it on Jesse for a second when he goes out to shoot those two drug dealers that Walt runs over with the car.
I can see that. The scene of him when he shoots heroin for the first time and he like lays back on the bed and then floats up into the air is kind of phenomenal. I've never done heroin. But I've been there before.
Representation of heroin.
Oh, I immediately vibed with some of my probably ecstasy or LSD or similar things.
Yeah. I only ever did ecstasy once and I shot it, which you're not supposed to do. And it was like, and it was not very ecstatic. It was like, my girlfriend and I were homeless and living in my van, but we had some money, like not enough to get an apartment, but enough that on New Year's Eve, we wanted to party. So we got a hotel room and we got like some sushi to go and we got some ecstasy and we shot it in this hotel room. And I ate the sushi and then just immediately threw the sushi up all over the bathroom, like painted the bathroom with sushi vomit. And the thing was, we didn't, like, you know, we didn't get a decent hotel. We got like a flea bag hotel at like 15th and Mission in San Francisco. Like literally we heard people not imagine this. We actually heard like people being like beaten up and stabbed in the alley below us, like while we're trying to celebrate the New Year's, you know, and we're tripping.
It does not
ecstasy.
Sound like a conductive ecstasy experience.
It was not, man. I think at some point we finally like snuck out and went back to the van and drove to like, you know, the Sunset District and parked on the street somewhere where it was quiet.
Do you ever see the movie Yes Men or Yes Man with Jim Carrey?
No.
It's not a great movie, but I'm just trying to communicate a premise. I was at a time in my life where I was sort of taking chaotic opportunities just for the sake of wherever they would lead me. And so it happened that I was sitting at a coffee shop and I was invited by a stranger to a hotel party to do ecstasy. And so I did ecstasy the first time in a room full of complete strangers that I had just met. And it was very strange because it makes you kind of like intimately familiar with people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I had never met any of them.
It's a lie. It's a lie, man.
Yeah, it's a lie.
Yeah.
It stuck with me for a couple of weeks, but I couldn't honestly tell you any of those people's names now.
Yeah, it's just a lie, man. You know what about the movie Pi? I forgot to mention this. It was kind of like crowdfunded before the internet. You know, this movie's from like 1998, before the internet really took off. And I think it took him a few years to make it. So he's probably working on it since before most people heard of the internet. But it's shot on film and it's black and white, and the budget was $60,000, which is pretty short for a shot on film feature that's good. You know, he's really smart about it, and he made like Requiem for a Dream. He made for like $3.5 million. I mean, he really can just hit it out of the park on a low budget. I mean, Requiem for a Dream was technically an independent film, even though it has like, you know, Academy Award winners actors in it, but he just, you know, did it right.
What makes something independent by definition?
Well, it was independently funded and then sold to a major distributor.
Okay.
Yeah. But Pi, he basically went to like everybody that his family and friends knew and asked them all for $100. And it was like it was like kid from Brooklyn, from kind of the hood, like does good, goes to film school, graduates film school, and then comes back and like basically asked all his Jewish relatives and friends and neighbors for $100 each as an investment. And he actually paid them back, which is kind of surprising, but like they're all listed in the credits in the movie. There's just this huge block of, let's see, you know, like if, is it 1,000? If it was $60,000 and 100 each, 60, how many is that? 6,000 names? I don't know, but
I can't do
maybe he got more than that from some of them, but it's this block of like every name is Jewish. It's all like, you know, Cohens and Greenbergs and like every name. And it's kind of weird that like, you know, and he told them about the plot. It's kind of like, it's kind of interesting that a bunch of Jewish people like,
it's kind of vaguely
anti-Semitic. It's about these like murderous rabbis who want to kill people because they have secret numbers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird.
That's odd.
Although maybe that's not anti-Semitic. Maybe that's empowering. Maybe it's like, yeah, man, don't mess with the rabbis.
Because they possess secret arcane biblical knowledge from before it was translated into that petty English all the Christians read.
But what's the mystical Judaism?
Kabbalah?
Yeah.
That's kind of what they're talking about.
Yeah,
that was one of the reasons why the movie freaked me out so much. So it wasn't pi, but it was the number of digits that were relevant to his equation. Like, oh, you found an 88-digit number or something like that. I don't remember what the number was.
It's 256, isn't it?
It was 250. That's it's as likely as the next thing. But whatever it was at the time, that was a number that was jumping out at me. Okay,
Jim Jesus says 216. Yep.
At the time, that was a number that I was seeing everywhere for some reason, like in phone numbers and addresses. And
well, there's yeah, kind of a thing.
And so
of
I was
like,
convinced it carried some mystical meaning or something. Yeah, it's the total.
Yeah.
When you buy a minivan, you see the mini. When you're on oxygen, you see oxygen everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. When you're into Satan, you see 666 everywhere. Yeah,
right.
But the character too in Pi, or the main character Max, I guess is his name, kind of like your main character. Max Cohen.
Yeah,
he's definitely a classic either. Unreliable narrator.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
they're the best kinds of narrators.
Yeah,
because they force the audience to question everything. That's what I like about them.
Yeah,
because you can't even trust. You have to think the story through yourself. You can't just be a recipient of the story.
Or the Hasidic Jews will kill you.
Yeah, right. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
So General Grievous is some sort of robot character from Star Wars that has a breathing apparatus.
Ah. So 6 times 6 times 6 is 216. So it's also okay. representative of the number of the beast.
There you go. Yeah, it's the product of the beast.
The product. It's the sum of the beast. You know, we just had Freedom Fiends number 666. I'm pretty psyched about that. I can't believe that many episodes, man. And I've hand-edited every one of them. I do secret stuff after they're recorded to make them sound better, too, that nobody else does. It also makes them louder than anything out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to step away from.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends. Infidel Talk Radio.
Everyone's an infidel to someone.
Yeah. I think we are to liberals, those vast herds of people that roam the land with bad ideas.
Oh, I'm definitely a heretic of the civic religion.
Yeah. So I blocked somebody for being statist at me the other day. It was so this discussion came up on the Freedom Fiends of this writer named Jack Donovan. Did you hear any of that?
No.
It was somebody who I know from like the exposing Molyneux forums or whatever, or you know, like someone who liked that I, you know, like interviewed the people who were in Molyneux's inner circle and said he was a cult. Like,
okay.
I made a lot of friends from strangers who agree with that and were happy I did that. And this guy was one of those. But, you know, it takes a village to bring down Molyneux. It takes a village to expose him. And it really has a lot of like weird bedfellows. I mean, there are like people who would not normally mix who will come together on that. And
that makes sense.
Yeah. So this guy was telling me that I needed to discuss the brilliance of the writer, Jack Donovan, on the Fiends. And I looked at this guy and he's like, he's a really weird mix. He's like, he's a gun guy. He's, you know, doesn't like big government. He's a men's rights movement guy. He's a homosexual, but he hates the gay rights movement. He's anti-feminist and he's pro like white supremacist. Really weird mix. So I was like,
yeah,
you know, I wasn't going to be on for a few days. So I was like, well, I'll give this to the resident gay correspondent. I had Derek J address it and he did. And, some people kind of took me to task for like what, you know, for not praising this guy. And like a lot of what came up was like, I don't see what's wrong with someone being tribalist, you know, for their thing, for being white. Like, why do you say someone's bad because they're into, you know, white pride? And, you know, when you never say that about like people who are into like black pride or Irish pride or whatever. And it's like,
sure, I do.
I think being, and I disagree with Derek J on it because Derek J was saying like, yeah, it's good to be proud of like what you are. And like, I got to take him to task for that or at least say that I actively disagree with him.
No, you should be proud of what you do.
I know. Exactly. and that's what MK said on that show. And I agree with MK and not Derek J. Although Derek J tends to be kind of a contrarian. He's kind of like the most un-PC. I mean, I think he's so
it's delightful, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think sometimes he'll play a devil's advocate role of like stuff he doesn't even really believe just to like kind of be the talk show host of like, well, let's consider this option. And sometimes it's not clear what he really believes. And I've taken him to task on this and said he needs to be more clear on, you know, when he's being devil's advocate and when he's really believing something. And he's agreed with it and kind of addressed it, but kind of doesn't always address it. So I don't know if he really meant it, but I think being proud of something you have no control over is ridiculous and collectivist. I don't care if it's being white, black, Irish, American, gay, or whatever. It's like all tribalism is poison. And I think it's responsible for most of the ills in the world. And it's also responsible for the existence and the continuation of the state the world over throughout history.
It's also a poor substitute for actual pride.
Yeah. So like you didn't build that. You didn't build.
If you can feel pride for something you have no control over and can't change, then that absolves you of the responsibility of doing something to be proud of.
Yeah.
Right. And I just, I've never gotten it. It's not, I don't want to say that it's evil or it's aggression or anything, but it's aggression adjacent, and it's at the very least irrational.
Yeah. And I've had people argue like, well, it doesn't violate the non-aggression principle. And I'm like, that is not the only thing in the world of like whether or not I think someone's on a good path or whether like I want to join them.
It's for me a lot like sports. You can't say that playing sports is a violation of the non-aggression principle. However, sports is an arena in which people learn to take pride in their geography for absolutely no moral reason whatsoever.
I think it's kind of been hijacked though too. I mean, like, I really like rodeo, but you can't go to a rodeo without like vast nationalistic displays, you know. This should be an anarchist rodeo.
What would we fight?
Nothing.
Charge? What do you do at a rodeo? Let's talk about that.
Ride horses.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone proof.
For some reason, in this country and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
What's up, Davi?
Not a whole lot. What's going on with you?
I don't know.
Groovy. Sounds exciting.
What do you want to talk about?
Third-hand smoke.
What a concept. What is that?
No, wait. We teased something. Didn't we tease something before we went to break?
I don't care.
Am I going senile?
No.
Don't care. Okay. Third-hand smoke is contamination by tobacco smoke that lingers following the extinguishing of a cigarette. Oh, I've had this. When my mom quit smoking, she used to smoke like a pack a day in her office. And so when she quit, we actually like moved out all of her furniture and scrubbed the walls because there was this yellow goop that was like dripping down the walls. And I was probably like 11 or 12 at the time. And I got high as a kite off of that.
Yeah.
Off the nicotine on the walls.
Yep.
And I guess that's what third-hand smoke is. Although it wasn't smoke, so they should come up with a better name.
I imagine that everything in Goodwill is covered with third-hand smoke. But apparently it can be a health hazard. Right,
yeah,
Davi?
I mean, can't everything be? Everything can be a health hazard.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Is there a liberal somewhere crying about this, or is this just a concept?
I don't know. But, you know, here's my thing about smoking and vaping now that I've been really harmed by decades of it. I don't think I'm going to start doing like voluntarist PSAs because that would be square. But I will say, I think that there is a tendency for people to do things that are bad for them, not just because they enjoy it or want to do it, but because some authority figure tells them not to. Like, I think that
it's the James Dean thing.
I think there's a lot of
smoking is cool because it's rebellious.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of anarchists who, you know, probably think and like it distorts their thinking. Like, I think a lot of anarchists think that vaping is completely safe because the government is trying to regulate it. And I think that there are a lot of people who aren't even anarchists who just don't like being told what to do, who probably smoke harder and longer and earlier than they would because square people tell them not to. And I think people should be aware of that.
This is my theory about that. This is the origin of my theory that a free society, a libertarian society, would be much less libertine than the freedom movement is. Like, if we all grew up in a free society that wasn't so, like, puritanical and drugs are bad and sex is bad and fun is bad and music is bad and everything's of the devil, I think there would be a much healthier – not it's not like it's not healthy, but there would be a lot less interest in drugs and promiscuity and things like that. I think that people would find themselves much more tempered
in a free society. Yeah, like, without really conservative moral and religious values, I don't think black metal would exist.
You don't think it would exist at all?
No. There'd be no need for it. Because I think it's a reaction against, being told what to do.
Well, a lot of it is a reaction. I mean, it's that old expression, right? Imposed order is escalation of disorder. And so a lot of... What?
Whoa. Say that again. That's deep.
Imposed order is an escalation of disorder. And so the idea with that is, like, if you impose, say, I don't know, anything. If you use aggression, even aggressive social aggression to impose something moral on a person that they don't internalize and they're just obeying for the sake of you not being mean to them, then there's going to be a backlash to that. They're going to swing hard the other way and be more into that vice than they would have been if you left them alone.
Well, I've always said that without Catholicism, there wouldn't be Satanists.
It's probably true.
Yeah.
I mean, like, any sort of theistic Satanist is kind of a Christian anyway. Like, they believe in the same worldview. They just pick a different team.
Yeah. Although a lot of people that say they're Satanists don't really believe in Satan.
No, that's sort of atheist Satanism, and that's more like of a Anton LaVey satirical point. Yeah, I've met both, and it's funny because, like, they can converse with each other without revealing which camp they're in, which is funny.
Wow.
Because to some it's a joke or a metaphor, and to others it's actually what they believe. Although the ones, like, theistic Satanists, in my experience, are disgruntled teenagers. Who just need to grow up and think about their worldview a little bit.
You know,
I don't meet a whole lot of adult.
One of the cool things that's happening with a lot of the cable TV media, you know, like the really good, like Breaking Bad and things like that, you know, the good original shows that are coming out of cable that can do things TV can't. One of the things is that there's a lot more. I think there are a lot more heroes that are older than there used to be. You know, like think about Walt. Like, I don't think you could have focused grouped Walt, but he's the perfect hero, you know, because, like, guys his age like him, but also young people like him, and he's square as heck, you know, at first. But even like Mike's a senile delinquent, you know, he's old, and but, you know, he's a punk. Like, when he's getting his warrant served, he sits down and watches an old movie about cops getting killed while the cops are in his house.
Yeah.
Serving a warrant.
Yeah. I love it. If you want me to read that, I'm going to have to get my glasses.
Yeah.
That's a great line. But he knew they were coming. So, I mean, I guess he's sort of collected.
Yep.
And he probably runs a clean ship anyway. Like, there's... you know, like, there's a difference between when Jesse and Walt first run the RV, and then later, after they have the super lab, when Jesse is running the RV with Badger and Skinny Pete, and Jesse gives him a bunch of money and says, fix all the taillights and fix the key thing and make sure it's all up. And Ben talks about this all the time. If you're going to be a criminal, you need to make sure your tags are up to date, right?
Yeah, Boston Tea Party talks about that in the book You and the Police, which is... I'll say it again. I said it before. I don't have any proof of this, but I think it is the basis of copblock.org. I think it basically tells you everything to do that Copblock does. And it was written like 15 years ago. It's the book that took me from statist to minarchist in one sitting.
Cool.
Yeah.
But my point is, I imagine that Mike is the type of criminal who knows the cop mind so intimately that there is not a shred of incriminating evidence of anything anywhere on his person or his vehicle or his apartment.
Yeah, I mean, he takes all his stuff and dumps it down some well somewhere. But, you know, he's also like one of the first times you ever see him really or hear him talk, I think, is when he's sent over to Jesse's house after the girl ODs to like clean up.
Yeah.
Isn't that one of the first appearances of him?
I think it is. He's the guy to clean up the whole thing.
I think it's the first.
I came home. I found her this way. Yeah. I don't know anything else.
Yeah. Hey, did you notice the two additions, text additions on the Freedom Fiends header on the site?
No.
Look at it.
I'll go look.
Yeah, they're subtle. Nobody's written to me about them yet. I'm waiting.
Well, now we're talking about it on the air.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the first.
All right.
I'm going to write you right now.
No, tell me.
Hey, I noticed.
Tell me on air.
After you told me. Well, it's loading really slow. I wonder if that's my computer.
That's your computer. It's on a really fast server.
I don't know what the holdup is, but I'll let you know when it loads.
All right.
I'll bet I've crashed it.
You probably have.
The beautiful thing about having two computers is I can crash one without disrupting.
I've used two computers simultaneously since I bought my second computer. You know, most people like...
Is it the Alpha Centauri dial?
Yes. Well, that's one.
Years to live, pair 15. Does that count down or up?
Down.
Or is that sort of like the doomsday clock?
Yeah.
Does it like change based on current events?
Yeah, that was there. The other one's over on the far left or middle left.
Heart of the Sun?
Yeah, there's a knob that goes to the Heart of the Sun. It's from a reference to a Pink Floyd song, Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar.
Yep. Yeah.
Groovy. Jumped right out at me. Although I don't think that I paid enough attention to the header to know whether it was there before or not.
Yeah.
But it was the first thing I noticed.
Well, this header is my mixer. It's a photo I took of my mixer and then adjusted the I'm using this mixer right now.
We're gonna have to use this to do our settings one day.
Well, Ben has the same mixer. Ben has the lower line of the same mixer, and so does The Scots have the lower one from him. Yeah, I tell everyone to get the same line of mixer. It helps me troubleshoot them. You know, if it's people I'm going to be doing shows with and they want to get a mixer, I tell them to get the Behringer Zenix series.
You know, after finishing a full walkthrough, after Better Call Saul went on hiatus, I went and I watched a full all six seasons of Breaking Bad. And I seriously think it's a contender for one of the best television series of all time.
I think it might be the best.
Thoroughly impressed. And I'm noticing things now that I didn't notice before. There's all kinds of subtlety and foreshadowing and
like the monkey with the machine gun. There's actually foreshadowing for the prequel for Better Call Saul.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But that too, like how much care has gone into Better Call Saul is more apparent to me now than it was before.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just amazed.
What do you think?
There's some other contenders over there.
What are some other contenders for the best TV shows? I always thought The Shield was one.
I didn't watch The Shield.
Shield was before Breaking Bad. And, you know, I thought it was pretty cool. You know, what's funny is I've seen, like now that I'm such an aficionado of Breaking Bad, I've seen a couple shows where the actor who plays Jesse is on shows before Breaking Bad when he's like 19. It's really funny.
Oh, really? I've never seen it.
Yeah, he's in an episode of CSI, the one where the monks get murdered in the monastery. And he's in an episode of Criminal Minds. He plays the red herring. Like there's some people get murdered in an apparent like satanic ritual, and so they immediately like, you know, arrest the one kid in town that's into heavy metal and Satanism, and it's played by the guy who plays Jesse, and he's really young. He's like 18. Alright.
Cool.
Worms. We're back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends.
Meow, meow.
Yeah, so part of the reason we work so hard at making these shows so good is because we want them to be around in 100 years. And if you want to help make that happen, you can share our torrents. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link over on the right. So, Davi, what is the topic for the last segment?
You know, even though we are attempting evergreen content, which is a word that means... it's a word that means still timeless, relevant in 100 years. We talk about current things like Breaking Bad because people in 100 years should go back and watch Breaking Bad.
I think they will be watching in 100 years.
I think Breaking Bad is evergreen content in that sense. And people will be emulating it for generations to come.
I think Better Call Saul will still be having live shows in 100 years, new shows.
Yeah, you think it'll be like Futurama and it'll be like Bob Odenkirk's severed head in a jar playing a character?
Well,
but it'll be a prequel and they'll have to explain that.
In the next 10 years, the technology will probably get to the point where, like, you know, they can just reproduce him from having, you know, scanning old episodes.
Like, I mean, with like a name Seinfeld like Odenkirk, he really should be indestructible.
Odenkirk. Odin and Captain Kirk, yes.
You know, you ask me what shows sort of compete with Breaking Bad for best series ever.
Yeah.
And something I can't think of is another show that breaks the rules of episodic media where at the end of an episode, things have returned to the status quo. Because that's sort of how episodic media works, right? Like there's conflict, there's resolution, and then things are relatively back to normal.
In a way that's really unnatural.
Completely ignores that rule.
Yeah. That
just doesn't happen at all. Breaking Bad is written like, you know, a 48-hour movie.
I think that other things broke that before that. The Shield broke that before that.
You see, I didn't watch The Shield.
Yeah. Because it's kind
of... So maybe it's not the first, but I can't think of any.
You can't watch shows where the cops are the heroes.
I can't tolerate it.
Yeah. So Liberland. What's Liberland?
Liberland. Liberland? Not Liberland?
No, it's Liberland.
Liber. Or is it Lieber?
It's Liber.
I don't know. It's one of these sort of secessionist projects, micronations things. It's a piece of disputed territory that somebody has gone in and said, hey, this is my sovereign nation now.
Yeah, good luck with that.
It's nestled between, where is it?
Croatia.
It's
in Serbia.
Right. So, you know, it's one of these things that will be a fun little piece of political theater for a little while. And then eventually some government will be like, nah, we'd really like to be collecting your property taxes. So,
well, one thing I haven't read anywhere about it, you know, it got a lot of press in the past week because some guy just like decided, you know, this is going to be I think he's kind of like a left libertarian from what I could tell. But he decided that it's going to be the, you know, he says anybody is welcome to, first of all, the problem is he's making a country, you know, he's saying like, you have to apply for citizenship. And he said, anyone is welcome to apply except for Nazis, communists, and extremists. The kind of funny
people with a history of those ideologies, not even just currently. If you have ever been a member of the Communist Party,
does he say that? Does he say that?
No, in the rhetoric, yeah, it said something like with a history or a past.
Well, then so you couldn't do it.
That's right, I couldn't.
Yeah,
I am disqualified.
I'm not.
But he also talks about having an immigration department. And I'm like, how are you going to tell me that you're this
freedom loving
paradise, and yet you want people to apply to get in, and you're going to be running bureaucrats in your immigration department 24/7. Like,
the really funny thing too is that somebody on Facebook started a group called the Communist Party of Liberland, which is funny because it's like you can't be communist and be in Liberland, but apparently the communists decided that they needed to start the Communist Party of Liberland. That's funny.
Yeah. Good for them. They have every right to be free as everyone else, as long as they
leave us alone,
enslaving others.
Yeah. But the thing that's not mentioned about Liberland that my friend in Croatia told me, Iva, the girl that's on the Freedom Fiends buttons, she said that Liberland is underwater part of the year, every year, from flooding.
Well, they should invest in scuba equipment.
Yeah, or it's built on stilts.
Hey, you realize that means global warming could put them underwater permanently, so they better have really intense carbon credit taxes.
And stilts. Yes. Houses on stilts. All right, man, it's been a great show. It's great to do a show.
Worms.
Especially with you.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
Yep. I'm back once in a while to until I get better. Then it'll be more full time.
Yeah.
Yep. Tomorrow night's Randy and Lou, I believe. And maybe Nick Hazelton. And Nima Vidati's this Sunday. Don't miss that.
I'm going to tune in for that live.
Yep. Worms.
Worms.